You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. I'm also the co-editor of Dunking with Wolves, the Timberwolves fan site on the Fansided Network. Happy Tuesday, everybody. A couple of notes here off the top today, and then I want to get back into the NBA big board for this year's draft that we started working through a couple of weeks ago. This is version 2.0. We did version 1.0 way back in early summer. I don't know, late spring, early summer, June, something like that. And we're at number 8 on the list, so I want to jump back into that here shortly. After we hit a couple of, actually, there's a LaMelo Ball note that I want to talk about off the top here in the first segment. Before we do that, a quick reminder to please subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you prefer to get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right. So actually, you know, the Wolves in-market bubble is continuing. There isn't a whole lot of new information since Monday's show. They had a scrimmage at Target Center on the Target Center floor on Sunday evening that we talked about on Monday's show. There were a few stats that were out there and some clips. And the team was back at work on Monday, but really nothing outside of a few clips, some B-roll, some clips of guys shooting on Twitter. So we got to see some Jarrett Culver's improved shot motion, his shooting form, which actually it does look better. Now, the question is, can it translate into games? Is it repeatable, et cetera? But it certainly looks, there's less of a hitch in his jumper at this point. But you could see Jordan McLaughlin shooting in those clips. You could see Culver. You can see Lindell Wigginton, who of course is up from the G League Iowa Wolves for the camp. And nothing else really new to talk about there other than it's ongoing. There's another scrimmage, I believe Thursday of this week. So hopefully there will be a little bit more information that comes out about that. The one other draft-related note that I want to talk about that's not directly related to the big board is there's a really interesting article up by Jonathan Wasserman at Bleacher Report. We've talked a lot about his pieces here recently. He actually was the one who had the report on Monday morning about the Wolves are likely to take LaMelo Ball if they can't trade the number one pick, that executives think the Wolves are going to take LaMelo Ball. Wasserman had an article last week that featured some trades in the top 10 that didn't include the Wolves. So he's actually been on top of a lot of this draft reporting. He now has an article that came out also on Monday, later on Monday, entitled Breaking Down LaMelo Ball's Unorthodox Jump Shot. Really interesting piece that includes comments from some scouts and executives, and then a number of clips of LaMelo Ball's shooting mechanics, which I've talked about on this show. I know that they're unorthodox, but I am less concerned about his shot than I think a lot of people are. So I want to kind of walk through this article a little bit. I'd encourage you to go read it on Bleacher Report. It does have some clips that I think are necessary if you're not familiar with Ball's game before you look at percentages or before you just assume he's going to shoot the ball similar to Lonzo Ball. I think it's worth diving into this a little bit, but I'll give you my take. So Wasserman basically leads off by talking about how a lot of scouts are just getting stuck on Lonzo Ball's shooting percentage in college. On three-point shots, he shot over 41% at UCLA, so everybody just assumed Lonzo Ball could shoot at the NBA level. He's shooting just over 34% for his career at the NBA level, and of course, his shot is pretty goofy looking. That's Lonzo. So right off the bat, it concerns me a little bit that people are comparing him so closely to his brother when obviously they're two different people. And just because they have, you know, it doesn't mean that they're going to function the same as a player. But anyways, so then the article gets into shot mechanics. It talks a little bit about his hand placement, which is not ideal. He almost shoots kind of a push shot, which, you know, a lot of people think that, when you teach somebody how to shoot a jump shot with perfect form, you don't want to get your guide hand in the way. You don't want your left thumb, if you're a right-hander, affecting your shot trajectory, affecting the rotation on the ball as you shoot it. So that's a little bit of a concern. Wasserman talks through the low release point in his shot, which, as I think he's correct in pointing out, that's less of a big deal because he's already 6'7", and there's plenty of guys a lot smaller than him. For instance, Trae Young, who shoot the ball, even Steph Curry's jumper doesn't actually have that high of a release point. And it works just fine because they can get that shot off. Ball's already got the ability to get those shots off with dancing with his dribble, you know, one-on-one situations whenever he wants with unlimited range. So the shot release point isn't nearly as big of a concern if you really think about it. And then talk about shooting off the dribble, pull-up jumpers haven't been great for him. He shot 11 of 43 this year in the half-court offense, shooting off the dribble. Shot selection for me is the most concerning thing. However, it's also probably the most correctable thing. Obviously, Ball has some bad habits. That was, you know, he played on some teams where he was obviously the best player by far. And so he forced some shots. He did the hero ball thing where he would just kind of dance with his dribble. And you know, the only guys that can really get away with that are Steph Curry and Trae Young, you know, and Steph Curry is obviously a lot better of a shooter than Trae Young. But those are the types of guys who can do that. And it's not seen as a terrible shot most of the time. And even, I mean, even Steph Curry sometimes forces those shots and drives Steve Kerr crazy. That, you know, if you're shooting 30% from three, you can't do that at the NBA level. So that to me is the biggest concern, but it's also the easiest thing that can be, that could be corrected with some coaching, with some, you know, explaining to him he's playing with teammates that are, once you get to the NBA, they're all good players in some regard. And so you can't simply just take those shots. So I think that's correctable. The range is positive. The one thing that Wasserman, I think this is a great breakdown. The one thing he doesn't talk about that I think is a pretty good indicator of future success is Ball's touch in the paint, his floater game, his ability to score in the paint. He is long and he's fairly athletic, but there's also, you also need to have touch. There's a lot of guys who have not had great touch. So for instance, Ricky Rubio is one of my favorite players of all time. I've talked about him here on the show. I think he still is underrated nationally. He's, to me, he's a starting caliber point guard in this league. And I think he's proven that with Utah and Phoenix after leaving Minnesota on some pretty decent teams. Rubio never really had good touch in the paint. He could score a little bit around the rim. He struggled with his percentages early in his career. And a lot of that was due to, you know, lack of confidence and some injuries, obviously. And he needed to bulk up. And he's done that in his, he's better at the rim now, much better than he was early in his NBA career, but he's never had a floater game. He's never really had that touch in the in-between. And I'm not talking about mid-range jumpers. I'm talking about getting into the paint and shooting floaters or, you know, little fadeaways, you know, from 12 feet or whatever. That's something that a lot of times pretends an improvement in shooting across the board, as well as free throw shooting. Free throw shooting, and that was one of the things with Rubio that everybody hung on to, Wolves fans hung on to, that, you know, maybe he'd develop a three-point shot, is because he was a good free throw shooter, a well above average free throw shooter. Ball's a good enough free throw shooter, and he's got really good touch in the paint. So that implies that he can have good touch on his jumper from deep as well, as long as he continues to improve, the shot selection improves. He finds himself in more catch and shoot situations if he plays with another creator, somebody like a D'Angelo Russell. And then also with professional coaching, as much as Pablo Prigioni has worked with Jarrett Culver and his jumper, and we'll see the fruits of that labor hopefully this year. Could LaMelo Ball continue to develop that jumper if he's already got that natural touch, that natural scoring ability, that natural athleticism and that size, and already has range despite not having a ton of, you know, he needs to work on his lower body. He needs to have a more consistent base when he shoots jumpers. He needs to continue to get stronger, but he can already shoot with range. It's a matter of the shot selection. It's a matter of continuing to improve his touch and clean up some of those, you know, weird things. Maybe slide that hand a little bit more to the side of the ball, get the thumb out of the way. Some of those different things that could help him, you know, get some of those bounces that he's not getting, or allow his shot to be more repeatable at least. So all that to say, I think this is an outstanding breakdown, and it's clearly the biggest question mark about Ball's game. Obviously, he's not a great defender either, but he's got the length and the athleticism to be a solid defender. That, again, has to do with coaching and effort, and he's longer and more athletic than D'Angelo Russell, and so there is something to be said for he could very likely become a decent defender pretty quickly with some good coaching, and as long as he tries hard on that end of the floor, which is, of course, a huge part of the battle defensively in the league. And he's got a strong basketball IQ. He's awesome offensively. So odds are he's going to be able to pick up those defensive concepts pretty quickly. So to me, the biggest thing is, can he become a league average shooter? And the conclusion that Wasserman comes to in this article is basically that yes, he could become something like a league average shooter. Nobody thinks he's going to be a sharp shooter, but if he can be 35% plus as a volume shooter, as Wasserman puts it, that's basically what D'Angelo Russell's doing now. He's maybe a little better than that. I mean, I think he hit 38% in Brooklyn, I think D'Angelo did. But if D'Lo can do that and be 38-39%, you know, on volume, 7, 8, 9 attempts per game, and Ball can hopefully take a couple less jumpers than that, but shoot it at 35-36%, that's manageable, because that means that defenses have to consider that as a threat. You know, if he's shooting 30%, you let him take a couple open threes a game and you're not too worried about it. He'll have a 1-for-5, 1-for-6, and you know, as long as you're clogging up passing lanes and keeping him from getting into the paint. But if D'Angelo Russell, or excuse me, if LaMelo Ball's out there shooting 3-for-7 every night, you got to think about it. You got to at least, you know, consider that when you're putting together a defensive game plan. And so if there's belief that he can get to that point in terms of his jumper, and you better believe the Timberwolves are having Prigioni study film of Ball and break down his jumper and decide if he can help him develop his jump shot as part of this draft preparation process, then I think, you know, the Wolves have to take that chance on Ball if they can't move the number one pick. And ultimately, I think that that's likely where they land. All right, next up, I want to get into the big board. Before we do that, let's talk about rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible to stock all the parts that you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person at the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand that their warehouse happens to carry? You have a computer with access to rockauto.com, both at home and in your pocket. One reason to repair and maintain your cars is to save money that you can then use for other important things like your mortgage or food. Why would you choose to spend 30%, 50%, or 100% more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or a new car dealership? Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers, but rockauto.com's prices are the same for everybody and they're reliably low. Rockauto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody, does not require membership or account login. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Go to RockAuto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. And while we're at it, let's also talk about our great friends at DoorDash. You want Chinese food, they want pizza, and someone is craving Froyo. There's something for everyone on DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you food that you're craving right now, right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your local favorite restaurants are still open for delivery. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local restaurant, and your food will be left at your door. DoorDash deliveries are now contactless to keep the communities that they operate in safe. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code LOCKEDONNBA. That's $5 off plus zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. Don't forget, that's code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. All right, let's jump right back into Big Board 2.0. Just quickly running through the top seven that I ranked here a couple weeks ago. Again, this is the second version of the Big Board. Number one on my current Big Board is LaMelo Ball. Number two, Anthony Edwards. Number three, Killian Hayes. Number four, Obi Toppin. Number five, Devin Vassell. Six, Tyrese Halliburton. And number seven, the big riser for me, is Patrick Williams, the forward out of Florida State. Today, I want to talk number eight and nine. Number eight on my list this time around is Isaac Okoro out of Auburn. I had him seven last time. I think he still sticks for me in this kind of late top 10, you know, right around Hawks at six, the Knicks pick at eight, somewhere in that range, maybe a little bit lower is probably where he gets picked. There's a lot of intrigue related to his size. He's 6'6 with a 6'9 wingspan. He's really smart. He's really strong on both ends of the floor, and he's a fantastic defender. And in fact, watching some of his college film reminded me a little bit of Luke Richard Mbamute in terms of the, or I guess now Luke Mbamute is what he goes by. But the way that Okoro plays, the way he uses his strength and his intelligence, but you know, there's also some similarities to a much bigger Josh Okogie, although even less, you know, he's not so much a perimeter player as Okogie, but even less scoring ability than Josh. Like, he's not going to put the ball on the floor and get to the basket and score necessarily. However, he's a solid rebounder. And again, 6'6 with a 6'9 wingspan, and he's strong. He can finish through contact in the paint, but most of the time it's going to be he's getting fed the ball in the paint or he's grabbing an offensive rebound. He's not going to score on his own, and he doesn't have a jumper, which is where the Bamute comparison comes to for me. I think the upside for him, he could be a player like a Jeremy Grant at the NBA level if he develops offensively. Now, Jeremy Grant had to develop offensively, and it took him several years to do that. He's on, what, his third team now in Denver, fourth team maybe. And Jeremy Grant's the type of player the Wolves are going to try and get in the offseason. It's very likely Grant ends up back in Denver, but could the Wolves, I mean, Jeremy Grant fits what the Wolves are trying to do. So a fully realized Isaac Okoro would also fit what the Wolves are trying to do if he is able to develop a little bit of an outside shot, have a little bit of more of an offensive threat to his game, and be kind of a supplemental offensive player, a fantastic defender and a solid rebounder for his size, play some three, play some four in the Wolves scheme. I think that that could work. So if the Wolves were to trade back, say, you know, with the Knicks, and I really don't know that that's going to happen. I've talked about this before, actually just wrote about it for Dunking with Wolves. The Knicks don't have the firepower to get to number one in terms of trade assets. But if they did, if they found a third team, if they were able to trade up to one to take Ball or Anthony Edwards, likely Ball, then the Wolves would slide down to eight. Okoro is a guy that they could target at eight if, say, Devin Vassell's gone. I like Vassell a little more. I like Patrick Williams a little bit more because I think that their upside is greater, and I think they're going to provide more offensively from day one, certainly, than Okoro would. But Okoro would work at number eight. And to me, he would be, you know, realistically like the third best option for the Wolves at number eight. So I have him number eight on my big board. I think that there is something to be said for his size, combination of size, athleticism, and intelligence, as well as, you know, because of all those things, there is some offensive upside. He's a smart player and he can contribute on the offensive glass. And there's some of those things that I think could work out well. And for that reason, he still makes it to number eight on my list. Let's also hit 9 and 10 today. Number 9 on my big board right now is Sadiq Bey. I had him 10 last time, so he just slid down one as well with the elevation of Patrick Williams on Big Board 2.0. Sadiq Bey is another big wing. He isn't quite as developed in terms of what he does now and doesn't project quite as well for me as Devin Vassell, but he's got a shot, and he maybe got a shot in terms of he's got a jumper. He can shoot threes. He shot 45% from three last year, and over 2 years in college shot almost 42% at Villanova. And he could step in and be an effective 3-and-D guy right away. I just don't think he's quite as developed in all those areas as even a Patrick Williams or a Devin Vassell. And I don't think he's going to be quite as effective defensively right away as Isaac Okoro. He's bigger than Okoro. He's 6'8". He's got a 6'10 wingspan. He could play the four in what the Wolves are trying to do, most likely, but he's not quite as big physically. And so I don't know that that would work quite as well with him as it would with Okoro. But Bay's not as good of an athlete either, and he's also not a playmaker. He's really just a catch-and-shoot type guy with the ability to be a solid defender both on and off the ball. He's versatile. Again, another really intelligent player. And the only real limitations for him is because he's more of a catch and shoot guy in offense. He's a good athlete, but he doesn't create his own shot. Which is fine. I mean, in what the Wolves are trying to do, if you've got D'Angelo Russell on the court, or you know, even Karl Anthony Towns initiating some offense, a guy like Bay who can catch and shoot and contribute in the open floor, think, you know, Josh Okogie maybe with a jumper in some ways. You know, I don't know that he's going to be as good of a defender immediately on the ball, but a smart big wing. He's a little bigger than Okogie, a little bit of a bigger wingspan. There's some similarities there as well. I compared him earlier to Rodney Hood, you know, maybe as kind of a floor, and Hood's turned in a pretty decent career. Maybe not what everyone thought initially when he came out of college. Damari Carroll maybe is a good case scenario. So kind of a borderline starter, sixth, seventh man type player. And, you know, if you're picking him, I've got him 9th on my big board. If the Wolves were to trade back and take him at 8 or 9 or 10 or wherever they potentially could trade back to, or somehow he slipped all the way to 17, that's pretty good value if you can get a Rodney Hood to Damari Carroll type player who can play the three, play the four, guard multiple positions, and you know, be effective in multiple places on the floor. So that's why I have him at number 9. All right, let's wrap up here with number 10 on the list on the Big Board 2.0 coming up next. All right, number 10 on my Big Board, Big Board 2.0, I should say, and there likely will be a 3.0 at this point with the draft still, I don't know, 7 weeks away or whatever it is. Number 10 on my big board is Onyeka Okongwu. I had him number 8 before, and there is a strong segment of a faction of Timberwolves fans who really believe that Okongwu could be a perfect fit alongside Karl Anthony Towns and really shore up the Wolves defense. And I don't know very many people that think the Wolves should take him at number 1, but I think before the lottery, there was a thought that if the Wolves were at 4 or 5 or something when the lottery was over, that they could target Okongwu. And he's a somewhat popular tradeback option for that group of Timberwolves fans. Here's why I'm skeptical. First of all, I don't think the Wolves are going to take somebody with this particular skill set at this size and play him at the 4 next to Karl Anthony Towns. We talked about this the other day, how remarkable the Timberwolves in-market camp roster is. Outside of Karl-Anthony Towns, Naz Reid's the only guy who's 6'9 or taller on this team, and Naz Reid isn't going to play minutes next to Karl-Anthony Towns. When he did, very briefly at times last year, outside of some of the defensive coverage issues, which had just as much to do with Reid being an undrafted rookie, one-and-done player from LSU who hadn't played at the NBA level much, and Towns also was struggling within the new defensive scheme, as it did with having two bigs on the floor. I mean, the Wolves aren't going to play two bigs together very often. Now, James Johnson's a big. I mean, he played some five, he played some four, played a lot of four, but he can also play some three. Jake Layman is more three than four, and he's going to play mostly three and four this year. Juancho Hernan Gomez is really a four. He's one of the guys who's not as positionally flexible, but he's also, you know, he's an okay rebounder, he's an okay defender, but he's not outstanding at really any one thing. So a guy like Okongwu, who's 6'9 with a 7-1 wingspan, he's not going to play the five probably at the NBA level, but he also doesn't quite have enough range on his jumper to be, you know, a four, unless he's Bam Adebayo. Now, Bam Adebayo has kind of, I think, changed everybody's perception of what a star could be in today's. I mean, everybody would agree at this point, Bam Adebayo is a star, hands down. But he's not a prototypical star. He doesn't have a three-point shot. He's not obviously a LeBron James type player, a Paul George, a Damian Lillard, somebody who's going to score from the perimeter, somebody who's going to score off the bounce. But he's so good defensively and switchable one through five and so smart and effective on the glass and in the paint that he is a star. And we'll see how he fares in the finals against the Lakers, which, by the way, get kicked off tomorrow night, Wednesday evening. But Okongwu, if a team, there's a real chance that Okongwu goes higher than initially anticipated simply because of the impact that Bam Adebayo has had, especially in the playoffs, but really throughout the season this year. And we've seen this kind of recency bias before from NBA teams. Very possible Okongwu goes top three, top four, top five, and isn't even on the board if the Wolves were to trade back to, you know, that, you know, 7 to 10 range or whatever, simply because of this recency bias towards an Adebayo type player. Now, I don't know if he's going to become Bam. There are some similarities in their profile from Bam Adebayo as a prospect to Okongwu as a prospect. The defensive intelligence, the switchability, the size, enough athleticism, all of those things are going to be really intriguing to some NBA teams who have seen Bam Adebayo basically be a co-star with Jimmy Butler to drag the Heat all the way to the finals. Obviously, the rest, I don't want to discount the rest of that roster, but you look at that roster 6 months ago, and nobody would have said there's enough star power to get to the finals. But as it turns out, Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler are both really good. But back to Okongwu, I don't love the fit with the Wolves. I don't think it's what they want to do. I think they want to find guys that can play the two, the three, and the four almost interchangeably. And there was a comment recently, Ryan Saunders mentioned that he thought Jake Layman would play as much or more two or three as he would four this year, which seemed odd to me. And then I realized that falls right in line with what we think we know about Ryan Saunders and Gerson Rosas and the organization. They want to find these guys who can switch two through four. Okogi can basically switch two through four. James Johnson can basically switch two through five. Jake Layman can basically switch two through four. Juancho Hernan Gomez can switch a little bit. You know, they're trying to find these guys who are interchangeable, and Jake Layman fits into that mold, certainly. And I don't know that Okongwu does as much. Now, he's a good enough defender, just like Bam. Again, Bam Adebayo can switch on to one through five. He can guard your team's best player regardless of position. So if you believe Okongwu can turn into that, then yeah, I mean, I think that could make some sense. But his lack of range on offense, his you know, lack of offensive skill, he's got good touch in the paint, and he can pass a little bit, he can finish at the rim. So that implies that with some NBA coaching and some reps, he could come up with a jumper. He could, you know, come up with a Taj Gibson mid-range jumper and at least stretch the defense a little bit, provide some space to allow Karl-Anthony Towns to operate a little bit. But the big difference between Adebayo and the Heat and Okongwu potentially in the Wolves is that the Heat don't have Karl-Anthony Towns. They don't have a five who needs to be trying to operate down low, who needs the space to score in the post a couple of times a game, or at least drive to the basket. And you know, Adebayo is going to need to be able to space a little bit. Okongwu would need to space a little bit on the Wolves. So I mentioned Taj Gibson. I also see some similarities there. I think he could have a little bit more offensive versatility than Taj Gibson, but we'll see. So I really like him as a prospect. I just have him number 10 on my board because I don't think he fits the Wolves, what they're trying to do. If I was starting a team in a vacuum, Okongwu is probably higher. He's certainly higher than 10 on my list. But remember, this is a big board through the lens of the Timberwolves front office, and I don't think Okongwu is likely to be much higher than 10 on the Wolves board. I think, again, if I'm starting a team in a vacuum, Okongwu for me is probably a top four or five prospect in this draft. But for the Wolves big board, for big board 2.0 here at Lockdown Wolves, I have him at number 10. All right, that's all we have for you today here on the show. We will be back on Wednesday. Of course, remember the show is daily Monday through Friday. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.